Hello, and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm Justine Ward, your host, for an hour of entertaining and patriotic programming to celebrate the 4th of July, American Independence Day. We have two entertaining shows, one a dramatized history, and then a 4th of July-themed sitcom, Father Knows Best. First, we have Cavalcade of America, dramatizing the creation and ratification of the U.S. Constitution. DuPont Chemicals sponsored this high-quality series to improve their reputation, which was tarnished by manufacturing munitions in World War I. Enjoy Cavalcade of America, the United States Constitution, first broadcast December 8, 1937, on CBS.
The Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont. On December 7, 1787, Delaware led the way towards the founding of a new nation, the United States of America. Yesterday, December 7th, 12 states joined with Delaware to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the first state to ratify the Constitution of the United States. In Dover, Delaware, representatives of the 13 original states met to unveil a memorial plaque in honor of the Delaware signers of the Constitution. This evening, the Cavalcade of America presents the story of the Constitution's birth. DuPont, a company identified with the earliest days of our nation, presents the Cavalcade of America in an earnest endeavor to contribute something of permanent value and enjoyment to radio listeners, and also as a tribute to the research chemists in DuPont Laboratories, whose ideals are so well expressed by the phrase, "Better things for better living through chemistry." As an overture, Don Voorhees and the DuPont Cavalcade Orchestra play Virginia, the march from the operetta of the same name. Cavalcade moves forward. Although the Constitution of the United States has been the foundation of our country since 1787, few of us realize why or how it came into being. Let us turn back the hands of the clock to the year 1784. It is market day in the city of New York. A fleet of boats loaded with livestock, vegetables, fruits, and dairy products has sailed from the New Jersey shore of the Hudson towards the city. On one of these sailing vessels, Hobbs, a New Jersey farmer, is talking with his son George as their craft pulls ahead of the others.
Well, I guess we've outdistanced them, son.
Looks like it, Father. Did you notice old Grimes' face as we passed him?
Yeah. It's worth buying this bigger craft just to see that look on his face.
He won't get the best location this market day.
No. Ought to be a good day for business, too. This fine weather. Yeah. And the New Yorkers will have to pay what we ask. It's just a case of supply and demand. We have the farms. They have to buy. And it's easier for us to sail over from Jersey than for them to drive in from upstate.
We're well ahead of the rest now, and I know just the place we can get...
Ahoy the pirates!
I wonder if he means us.
Who?
That man in the rowboat.
You there, in the bar!
Seems so. You calling us, mister?
Where are you bound?
That wharf yonder.
Can't land there.
Why, we always have.
There's a new law. Passed for the assembly last week. All boats over 12 tons must be entered and cleared at the custom house.
But we ain't foreign craft, mister. We're from Jersey.
That's why the law was made. Our state's been letting you fellas take too much of our money.
But, mister, now...
Either you head for the custom house or go back where you came from. Understand?
Well, George, I suppose we'll have to do as he says.
Yes, Father.
It's outrage, but we can't let our vegetables spoil.
Day in New York, a crowd of farmers from New Jersey and Connecticut offering their wares to the New Yorkers. Usually a happy lot, pleased with the idea that they're outsmarting the city folk. Today, bitter at having to pay large duties as if they were foreigners. Hobbs and his son have a stall near a man from Connecticut.
Just as if we ain't Americans.
Well, never mind, Farmer.
Well, hey, Connecticut.
Yep.
Say, did you have to pay duty when you brought your firewood into New York?
Never did.
Say, what did we fight for? Where's this freedom they promised us? What do these New Yorkers think they are?
Still Tories, I call it.
Yeah, they want a lighthouse on our Sandy Hook. Well, I hope New Jersey makes them pay through the nose.
Say, were you able to pay the customs man?
Able to pay him? I had to pay him.
I mean, did he accept your money?
He fairly seized it, every shilling we had.
Wouldn't accept my money.
What you mean?
I wanted hard money. Said my Connecticut paper was no good in New York. I asked him, ain't Connecticut in the United States? We did our share. Look, that lady and gentleman are trying to attract your attention.
What, this gentleman? Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir.
May we see your fowls, please?
Fowls, yes, sir.
My wife has been trying to attract your attention while you and your friend were busy with your interesting argument about duties and state money.
Say, if you're making fun of me, sir...
No, decidedly not. I happened to overhear your grievance, and I sympathize with you. Perhaps I might suggest something by way of remedy.
Now, you can discuss politics after I purchase my fowl, dear.
George, you wait on the lady.
Yes, Father.
I'll tell you, I'd like...
I want to hear what this gentleman has to say. You're a New Yorker, ain't you, sir?
I'm an American first, a New Yorker second.
Well, what do you mean by that, sir?
Well, perhaps I can best explain by an example. Now, that bundle of sticks there...
This one tied together? You mean this one, sir?
Yes, that's it. May I use it as an object lesson?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Now, bound together, as the sticks are, you couldn't break them, could you?
Bound together? No, well, you ain't supposed to. You break them one at a time.
Precisely. Bound together, they're firm. Singly, they're easily broken. Now, doesn't that suggest something?
Well, I don't know. When they're together...
Our 13 states united. The same laws, the same money, free trade between them. United in fact, as well as in name, means a country. But 13 states, each jealous of the other, trying to stand singly, means chaos.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I have the fowl, dear, and some vegetables. Will you pay the man?
Oh, certainly, my dear. There you are, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, Betsy, you'll want these delivered, won't you?
Oh, will you deliver them?
That I will, gladly.
Thank you.
If you, sir, will tell me some more about this no duties between the states and this money business. You know, I'd like to be able to talk about it like you do to some of the folks back in Jersey.
I want you to tell your friends. I wish I could spread the word to everyone in the states.
Mr. Hamilton is always glad to expound his favorite topic, a well-organized central government.
Yeah. But what did you say that name was, ma'am?
Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton. Ours is the third house on the square. Come, Betsy.
Yes, sir.
I shall expect you, sir.
All right. Say, did you hear who that was, Connecticut?
Yes.
Colonel Alexander Hamilton. And he talked to me like he was nobody at all.
New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut were not the only states to set up duties. Virginia and Maryland also had their custom houses. And the advocates of a responsible central government finally persuaded these states to appoint commissioners who were to meet at Alexandria to form some plan which would regulate commerce and prevent smuggling. The commissioners met in March 1785 and decided to consult with the one man who was respected by all the states, George Washington. We find the commissioners at his home, Mount Vernon, where Alexander Hamilton is also a visitor.
It's not merely the case of Virginia and Maryland on opposite sides of the Potomac, gentlemen, but every one of our 13 states and our territory beyond the Alleghenies.
You've traveled through that country yourself, I believe, General Washington.
Yes, sir. And for a number of years, I've been working on the idea of a canal connecting the Potomac with the Ohio.
A splendid project, sir.
But if the canal is to be completed, gentlemen, Delaware and Pennsylvania also have to be consulted. I realize our people are widely separated. Merchants and fishermen in the north and east, planters in the south, farmers in the central states, trappers in the west, all have varied interests. We need some common bond, some way of making them all see their federal responsibilities.
Why, our Articles of Confederation give Congress the right to pass laws for the benefit of all the states.
Yes, but they don't give Congress power to enforce them.
But, Colonel Hamilton, our states are very jealous of their powers.
The proposition is self-evident, gentlemen. We are either a united people or we are not. If we are afraid to trust one another under qualified powers, there is an end of union.
General Washington is right, gentlemen. And his advice is worth accepting because we know it comes from an unselfish wish to unite the country he loves. Our states are drifting away from each other. There are too many quarrels over boundaries, duties, money, sharing the public debt. The courts and the laws are defied. It means chaos.
Have you any solution, Colonel Hamilton?
Yes, I have. With regulation of commerce as a keynote, we propose that Virginia extend invitations to all the states to send delegates to a trade convention. And perhaps at the same time, we will be able to propose some plan for more important matters.
If you mean the revision of the Articles of Confederation, Colonel Hamilton, many states will refuse to send delegates. It's a delicate subject. However delicate the revision of the federal system may appear, gentlemen, it is a work of indispensable necessity.
In September 1786, a convention was held in Annapolis. But so little was thought of the idea that only five states were represented: New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Virginia. However, it resulted in the call for another convention the following May. At first, the states were slow to respond. But on May 29, 1787, the most momentous convention ever assembled in America took place in historic Independence Hall, Philadelphia. A group of the delegates are talking before the convention is called to order.
Even in the face of this surprising representation, Mr. Hamilton, I can hardly make myself believe that what we are doing is strictly legal. There must be limits to the powers of this convention.
But I took care of that when I drew up the call for the convention, Mr. Patterson. I believe it covers every phase of the matter.
You really believe that the Articles of Confederation can be successfully revised?
No, sir. Not revised, but discarded entirely.
What, sir?
We must have a new constitution. Don't you agree, Mr. Madison?
A constitution with a centralized government, Colonel Hamilton.
But won't the states rebel at the usurpation of their authority?
Whatever we may submit must be agreed upon by specially called conventions. They will be adequately protected.
Good morning, Mr. Hamilton. I trust I see you well, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Wilson. Gentlemen, this is Mr. James Wilson of Pennsylvania.
You know Mr. James Madison of Virginia, I think.
Yes, I do.
Mr. Patterson of New Jersey and Mr. Ellsworth of Connecticut.
Well, gentlemen, a new set of ideas seems to have crept in since the Articles of Confederation were established. Conventions of the people or with power derived from the people weren't thought of.
Without the confidence of the people, my dear Ellsworth, no government can long subsist.
Oh, pardon me, gentlemen.
I see Dr. Sainton entering the hall. I want to pay my respects.
I think it would be fitting for us all to do likewise. Yes, right. A grand old gentleman, over 80, they say.
Yes, his body may not be as vigorous as formerly, but there's no finer mind in America today.
No finer in the world, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How do you do?
Good morning, sir. Ah, colleague Wilson, I'm glad to see you.
And I, sir.
See all these gentlemen.
Thank you.
How is a friend of the human race today?
We're grateful to have you to turn to for advice, sir.
I trust you, gentlemen, are not trying to turn my head with your fat
old. Oh, no. Oh, no. You should have been named the president of this convention, sir.
He's well called the savior of his country. And if I'm not mistaken, he's calling us to order. To tell you the people.
Gentlemen, time to be seated. Gentlemen. It is all too probable that no plan we propose will be adopted. Perhaps another dreadful conflict is to be sustained. If to please the people, we offer what we ourselves disapprove, how can we afterwards defend our work? Let us raise a standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hands of God.
A number of plans were submitted, but one based on federal supremacy and another on state sovereignty were at war from the start. Prejudices and personal interests caused long and bitter debate. At one time, when it seemed that the delegates would never come to an agreement, the wise and benevolent Benjamin Franklin suggested that a recess be declared for 3 days, during which time he proposed that the members of the convention mix with and listen to members who had different viewpoints. We find a gathering of delegates discussing what has been and what must be done.
But gentlemen, everyone admits the weakness of the Articles of Confederation. Congress is impotent to raise money. It can't impose duties. It can't even settle a quarrel between the states. We all know it, and yet we can't agree on a remedy.
The small states insist on equal representation with the large states.
That, sir, is impossible. Unless there is representation by the population, it is extremely possible that a minority would soon rule the majority.
But there's nothing to prevent two legislative branches, an upper house with equal representation of the states, and a lower house with representation by population, each acting as a check on the other.
Certainly.
And an executive who would act as a check on both. But who would check the executive? We have no wish to drift into monarchy.
It could be arranged that under certain circumstances, a bill could be passed over the veto of the executive. Each could act as a check on the other.
Is one head as good as, say, three executives?
One man would feel the responsibility more than several. And he could have a council to aid and guide him.
Our state will never submit to despotism or tyranny.
It's better than anarchy.
Gentlemen, I've listened to your arguments with much interest.
Oh, Dr. Franklin,
I haven't.
May I offer a suggestion?
Oh, please do, Dr. Franklin.
Do, Dr. Franklin.
Gentlemen, we were sent here to consult, not to contend with each other. State after state has broken the Articles of Confederation. One has made a separate treaty with the Indians. Another has issued paper money with no coin behind it. What pleases the North is anathema to the South. We must prepare a constitution of compromises. Let us forget our contention, gentlemen, and think now how we may best compromise. Was still to be done before the work was accomplished. On the 8th of September, a committee was appointed to draw up the final document. From the 12th to the 17th, this final draft was debated by the convention. And on the 17th, it was accepted unanimously by the 12 state representatives and signed by 39 delegates. But before the Constitution could become law, it had to be accepted by 9 of the 13 states. Dr. Franklin was anxious that Pennsylvania should be the first to ratify,
And on September 28, 1787, in the legislature, he moved that a state convention be called. This was immediately the cause of bitter argument, which lasted for months, with no vote being taken. Early in December, a group of the convention members meet and discuss the situation.
The Constitution's all wrong. It contains no Bill of Rights.
May I reply to that, sir?
Yes, let's hear what Mr. Wilson has to say.
Yes, Wilson. Here, James Wilson.
I was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. We discussed the Bill of Rights, but we decided it was unnecessary. When we were under English rule, such a bill was necessary because our rights came from the king. Now the rights are with the people, and any power which hasn't been given to the central government remains with them. Have you gentlemen read the preamble carefully? We, the people of the United States.
I still say that the delegates exceeded their authority in making a constitution at all.
We claimed no authority. We made a constitution which we thought necessary, and now it's laid before the states to ratify or reject as they see fit. Dr. Franklin says...
Dr. Franklin's too old to know, and most of the work was done by a lot of young men. Madison and Hamilton, King and Pinckney.
Where can the country turn if not to its youth? Our country's too big for a central government.
Yes, Wilson. Yes, here's news. News just in by the post rider.
Thank you. Just a moment, gentlemen, till I can read it, please. Well, Pennsylvania has lost her chance to be the first to accept the Constitution. On December 7th, Delaware ratified by a unanimous vote of its state convention. Delaware was the first state to ratify the Constitution, and one by one, the others followed. On April 30th, 1789, outside Federal Hall in New York City, a large crowd assembles to witness the inauguration of the first President of the United States. Among the onlookers are our friends, the New Jersey farmer, his son, and a man from Connecticut.
Well, hello, Connecticut.
Hi.
Come down for the excitement?
Been driving since early this morning. Seems like everybody in the state is trying to crowd into this square.
Yep. Well, it's a sight we've never seen before, nor will ever see again. The first president of the United States taking the oath of office.
Where is the ceremony to be performed?
Oh, yonder, on that balcony. The one with the columns there. You can see the table there with the red cover?
No, yes. Never saw so many flags and banners all in one place.
Oh, it's a great sight. I was bound my boy Georgie wouldn't miss it.
Oh, you're enjoying the celebration, eh, George?
Oh, yes, sir. You should have been here this morning. General Washington was rowed across the river in a big decorated barge by 13 oarsmen, all dressed in white.
You don't say.
Yes, and there was a parade from the wharf to the hall there. Famous men from all over the country. You never heard such cheering. And I saw His Excellency almost as near as I am to you.
Yeah, they say he's been welcomed all the way from Virginia. I know they erected a triumphal arch, Clinton. And there was women, you know, singing and throwing roses in his path.
Yes. Someone's coming out on the balcony now.
That's General Washington, the tallest man there, in the dark brown suit.
Yeah, let's push away near so he can hear something.
Yes, let's go.
Excuse me, please.
Let me by here. Yes, just a minute. Let me
excuse me. Who's that with him in the black robe?
That's Chancellor Livingston. He's going to administer the oath.
That's the Bible, isn't it, Father? Lying on the cushion?
Yeah, must be.
Chancellor's raising his hand.
I will repeat the presidential oath. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Do you so swear?
I, George Washington, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. It has been done.
This is a great day for America, Father.
The greatest, son. We're a nation, at last.
They're raising the book, but he bows down to kiss it.
Long live George Washington, first president of the United States!
By the
the adoption of the Constitution, the United States, no longer a loosely bound group of single units, took its place among the great nations of the world. To the valiant and far-seeing men who made it possible, we owe a debt of gratitude, and we salute them as leaders in the cavalcade of America. And now we are pleased to welcome as our guest on this evening's DuPont Cavalcade, Honorable Richard S. Rodney, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of Delaware. Judge Rodney is a descendant of George Reed, one of the original signers of the federal Constitution. He is also a collateral descendant of Caesar Rodney, whose horseback dash to Philadelphia made Delaware's vote unanimous for liberty and helped bring about the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. And Judge Rodney, you are something of an authority on the Constitution, and I understand that you are the owner of much of George Reed's correspondence. Do his letters reveal any unusual sidelights on the events of those days?
Well, many of the letters written by the statesmen of the time have been published. Yet I suppose few people realize that one man signed the Constitution twice, and another man, whose signature apparently appears on the document, never signed it at all.
Well, that is interesting. Well, how did it happen, Judge Rodney?
Simply that John Dickinson, another of Delaware's delegates to the convention, had to return home before the signing ceremony took place. So he wrote, asking his friend George Reed to sign for him. That's how it came about that Reed signed the Constitution twice, while Dickinson, whose name appears as a signer, actually never did put his signature on it.
Thank you very much, Judge Rodney. DuPont is pleased to have had you as a guest on this program, dramatizing those stirring days in the cavalcade of America. Twelve years after George Washington was inaugurated first president of the United States, a sailing vessel, the American Eagle, dropped anchor at Newport, Rhode Island. Among its disembarking passengers were Pierre S. DuPont de Nemours and his two sons, Victor and Irénée. 2 years later, in 1802, young Irénée DuPont, encouraged by his friend Thomas Jefferson, who was then president, established a small powder mill on the banks of the Brandywine Creek near Wilmington, Delaware. Jefferson himself used DuPont powder to remove rock from the grounds of his home at Monticello, Virginia. DuPont's tiny enterprise supplied powder that enabled frontier settlers to secure food and defend themselves against wild animals and Indian raids. Later, as the nation grew, DuPont produced new types of blasting agents to help clear lands for farming, blaze trails for the highways of the future, build railroads and deepen waterways for navigation. Still later, at the turn of the century, the DuPont Company established the Chemical Department, dedicated to development work and research. As the needs of the nation grew, this department grew, until today it is really the heart of the DuPont Company. From the chemical department have stemmed a variety of DuPont chemical products which contribute to the comfort and convenience of modern life. One of the first of these was coated fabrics, now used for bookbindings, luggage, and upholstery. Then came pyroxylin plastics, first employed in making toilet ware, now serving in almost countless ways from toothbrush handles to safety glass. Today, there are 6 DuPont plastics for various needs. Next, the DuPont Company offered to expanding American industry a group of so-called heavy chemicals, acids, pigments, and the like, for making a great variety of useful things from wallpaper to automobile tires. About 20 years ago, DuPont helped establish an American dyestuffs industry to produce truly color-fast dyes at low cost. Then came the man-made yarn, rayon, followed by DuPont's development of a moisture-proof, transparent wrapping material, cellulose film. And so it is gone, one forward step leading logically to another.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour with your host, Justine Ward. We broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. Subscribe for free through iTunes, Podbean, or RSS. Next, we have a more modern 4th of July with Father Knows Best. Today, it is a fun and festive family holiday, but Father tries to take the family back to what it meant to families like theirs in revolutionary times with a little bit of time travel. You'll enjoy Father Knows Best, Meaning of Independence, first broadcast July 5th, 1951 on NBC.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so. And your father knows best.
this is Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House. The coffee that's always good to the last drop. Be it ever so peaceful and ever so fair, be the sun shining bright at your door, there's nothing so sad or so full of despair as the morning after the night before. It's breakfast time in Springfield, and in the white frame house on Maple Street, all is not well. The 4th of July was a big day for the Andersons, but not as big as it might have been. That's why, on the 5th of July, the family goes to work on the greatest fall guy the world has ever known. Poor old Father. Like this.
But you said we weren't allowed to shoot off firecrackers.
That's right.
Well, Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he shot them off.
Kathy, I've told you a dozen times, shooting off firecrackers is against the law.
They shot them off in the park.
You eat your breakfast.
Well, didn't they?
Betty, do as your father tells you.
Can't I even talk?
Eat your breakfast, dear.
Jumping creepers.
Everybody else got to shoot off firecrackers except me. I never get to do nothing.
You never get to do anything.
You said it. Everybody else.
Kathy, for the 10 millionth time, the use of firecrackers within the city limits of Springfield is illegal.
Then why did they shoot them off in the park?
Because that was a fireworks display. It's entirely different.
Mom, I can't find my other shoe.
Look under your bed, dear.
I did look. Never mind. I found it.
Bud, hurry up or you won't get any breakfast at all.
Okay, Dad.
Couldn't find his ears if they weren't fastened on.
Why are you shooting firecrackers in the park different?
Because it was part of the city's celebration. That's why.
Jimmy Woody shot off firecrackers, and I'm as much a part of the city as he is.
Kathy.
His father didn't tell him it was different.
Margaret, may I please have my coffee?
Of course, dear.
Every time somebody does something and I can't, it's different.
There you are.
Thank you.
Everybody gets a bigger allowance than I do, but it's different.
Kathy, in just about 1 minute...
I have to go to bed when it isn't even dark, but that's different, too.
Margaret, will you please tell her to be quiet?
People don't even like me around here. I'm going to join the WAX. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show the whole bunch
Kathy,
of you.
Kathy, be quiet.
But why can everybody else...
Eat your breakfast.
Gee whiz. I don't know what she's got to complain about. I was the only girl at the whole dance who had shoulder straps on her dress.
Now, don't you start.
Father, if you just wouldn't be so old-fashioned...
I am not old-fashioned. But I will not have my daughter traipsing around in a dress that's held up by nothing but a prayer and a city ordinance.
Jim, there's really no reason why...
Well, for the love of... Margaret, one of these days, that boy is going right through the stairs, so help me.
I don't think so, dear, but I'll speak to him again.
It's like living in a house with a bull rhinoceros.
Good morning, everybody. What's cooking?
Father is.
Betty, please.
Bud, is there any reason why you can't come down the stairs like a normal human being?
How do they do it?
They walk.
That's what I did.
You... May I have the cream and sugar, please?
Oh, here you are, dear.
Thank you.
Nobody even cares if kids have fun on the 4th of July.
Dad...
Kathy, let me explain it to you once more. The reason children are not permitted to have firecrackers is a very simple one.
They don't want us to have any fun.
They don't want you to get hurt.
Dad...
Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he didn't get hurt.
Good.
He only got 3 little blisters.
Fine.
On each hand.
Dad.
What is it, Bud?
Do you know how old Jerry Wilson is?
87?
He's 12.
Well, you certainly had me fooled.
Would you care for some more toast, dear?
No, thank you. This will be fine.
And his father bought him a gasoline scooter.
Bud.
I'm 15, and I had to go to the picnic on a bicycle.
How would you like to wear an evening gown with shoulder straps?
I don't even like the 4th of July. I never saw such an awful day in my whole life.
Well, you all had a pretty miserable time yesterday, didn't you?
Well, gosh, Dad, if a 12-year-old kid can have a gasoline...
You
scooter...
had nothing on your busy little minds but firecrackers and shoulder straps and gasoline scooters. Important things like that.
Father!
Nobody thought about the 4th of July, what it means, what it is. When I was a boy, the biggest thrill of the year was raising the American flag on Independence Day. But you were busy with more important things. Maybe that's the trouble with a lot of people in this country. They haven't the time to honor their flag or think of what it means to them as individuals, as a people.
Holy cow, Dad.
Be quiet, Bud, and listen.
Yes, ma'am.
We've all lost sight of the fact that the freedoms we take so much for granted, the right to speak our minds, the right to live as we choose, weren't always ours. Less than 200 years ago, our ancestors had to fight for them. And they didn't intend that Independence Day should be spent killing one another on the highways or blowing ourselves to bits with firecrackers. They fought, and some of them died, to give us freedom. And now we've forgotten them.
Father, we know all about Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin.
I know about George Washington.
I don't mean people like that, kitten. I mean plain, ordinary people like ourselves. The families of merchants and lawyers and hard-working farmers. Those are the people we've forgotten. The people who fashioned a whole new nation out of blood and tears and gossamer dreams. You know, 175 years ago, there was no United States of America. There was only a feeling of great unrest and resentment among the American people. In the larger cities, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, there was a sort of seething tension in the streets, in the coffee shops, everywhere. But life went on. People lived as they must always live.
But, Mama, I don't like cornmeal mush.
It's very good for you, Kathleen.
All I ever get is cornmeal mush.
We'll have no arguments, child. Eat your breakfast and be quiet.
Yes, Papa.
Father?
Betsy. This is hardly the time to interrupt your father.
But, Mother...
Later, dear, please.
I'm quite finished with my newspaper. May I have my coffee, please?
Yes, dear. I hope I roasted the beans long enough this time.
I'm sure you did, my dear. Thank you.
James...
Margaret, if you and Betsy intend to speak of that dress again, may I warn you now that you are wasting your breath.
Father, the Widow Southgate says there's a latest style, and if only you weren't so old-fashioned...
I am not old-fashioned. I pride myself on being as modern and as well-informed as these changing times allow. But I will not permit a daughter of mine to risk the vapors in a low-cut bodice.
Dear, the Widow Southgate tells me...
Mother!
Jamie, how many times have you been told not to shout from the top of the stairs?
But I can't find the buckle for my other shoe.
Margaret, will you please instruct your son...
Jamie, have you looked under your bedstead?
Yes, ma'am, I've looked... Never mind, it was inside of the shoe.
I'm very concerned about that young man.
James, he's only a boy.
He's 15 years old and preparing to enter the university. How can he expect to make his way in the world if he can't keep track of his shoe buckles?
Mother, you were going to tell Father what the Widow Southgate said. Well...
Margaret, I have told you repeatedly that we cannot do business with the Widow Southgate.
But James, I've known Amanda Southgate all my life.
She has been denied a permit under the terms of the Lord North Restraining Act. And as an attorney sworn to uphold the law, I cannot permit you to trade with her establishment.
James, you know as well as I that the law is unjust.
We have already taken steps to ask that it be changed.
As you've asked that other laws be changed? As you've pleaded for representation in the government of the colonies? As you've asked...
Margaret...
When will you stop asking? When will you demand that we be heard?
When we have exhausted every peaceful method of petition. When we know deep in our hearts that the last stone has been turned. Jamie! Jamie! Madam, something must be done about the manner in which your son defies the laws of gravity.
Has Parliament passed a law about that, too?
Good morning. I trust everyone is well.
Good morning.
Good morning, brother.
Jamie?
Yes, Father?
What are you trying to establish in this constant attack on a perfectly innocent staircase?
I
presume that was you descending the stairs. Or was it a band of horsemen pursuing a wild boar through our sitting room?
Father, I'm certainly glad you mentioned it. Do you know Jeremiah Wilson?
Did I mention Jeremiah Wilson?
No, but he's only 12, and his father bought him his own horse.
Jamie.
I'm 3 years older than he is, and do I have a horse? I have to walk to school.
Jamie.
And that's a long walk. 8 squares. And everybody else in the whole school.
Jamie.
Yes, sir?
A boy who cannot keep track of his shoe buckles cannot be entrusted with his own horse.
How can you misplace a horse?
If there were a way, you'd manage.
Betsy, no one asked for your opinion.
I didn't say anything, did I, Mama?
No, Kathleen.
I've been very good, haven't I, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Do I still have to eat my cornmeal mush, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Gee, Willikins.
Jamie, the front door.
Nobody's afraid that I'll misplace the front door.
I could close my eyes and find the front door in the dark.
I don't know. When I was a boy, my father never permitted this turbulence at his breakfast table. Breakfast was a quiet meal, peaceful and calm. There was none of this excitement and confusion. Everything was well ordered and contained. Everything...
Mother, it's Mistress Smith.
Elizabeth!
Margaret, you've got to help me. We're in the most terrible trouble.
Girls, perhaps you'd best go outdoors and take your brother with you.
But I haven't finished my mush.
Go along, Kathleen.
Good day, Mr. Smith. Come along, Katie.
Don't call me Katie.
Now, Elizabeth?
Oh, I'm just beside myself. Nothing like this has ever happened in the entire history of our family.
Elizabeth, may I suggest that you calm yourself?
You. The entire affair is your fault.
My fault?
Elizabeth!
You were the one who put him up to it. You were the one who told him not to pay his taxes.
You mean Hector, I presume?
My husband. If only he hadn't listened to you.
Elizabeth, I assure you...
You gave him those articles on freedom. You explained to him that the Sugar and Molasses Act was illegal. You told him to petition the repeal of the Restraining Act. You told him
all... What I told Hector was true. The advice I gave him was sound. Our petitions are valid. Our protests are impeccable. If we stand united, no one can be punished.
No? Then why is Hector in jail?
Oh, Jane.
That's what I call truly good coffee. How about a second cup, darling?
Those are wonderful words to hear, especially when you hear them from the world's greatest coffee expert, your husband. Of course, lots of folks think of us as experts, too, since more families do buy our Maxwell House coffee than any other brand. But when you make coffee for your husband, why, he's the expert who say so you care about. And tomorrow, if you'll just pour him a cup of heartwarmingly good Maxwell House coffee, we're mighty sure he'll say,
best coffee I ever tasted.
In fact, we'll return your money if he doesn't say that. You see, only Maxwell House has that wonderful good to the last drop flavor. Because only Maxwell House has the recipe. It's one that demands choice, extra flavor coffees, blended and roasted just so. And since no coffee is made like Maxwell House, no other coffee tastes like Maxwell House. Tomorrow, serve our Maxwell House to your husband. If he doesn't say, best coffee ever, why, just send us the can and unused portion, and we'll gladly refund your money. Our address is right on every familiar blue tin. Yes, to please the world's greatest coffee expert, your husband. Serve him Maxwell House coffee. Always good to the last drop.
It's moments later in the white frame house on Maple Street, but the Andersons aren't conscious of time. They've been swept back to the days of the American Revolution, to the story of a family much like their own. They've moved through the streets of an early American city, through the doors of the Court of Justice, and there they sit quietly, patiently, while an 18th century Anderson prepares to defend the rights of his friend Hector Smith. Like this. Hector, you must be truthful with me. Did you say anything more?
Jim, I take my oath. I told the man just what you told me to, that I was not going to pay taxes unless I had a voice in my own government.
And naturally, you had to say it to a man who was a representative of the king.
Elizabeth, how was I supposed to know
my husband. Thousands of people in the city, and he has to argue with tax collectors.
Elizabeth, I'm sure it isn't as bad as you fancy. Is it, James?
I don't know, Margaret. In these affairs, one can never be sure.
Oh, the disgrace. That I, a Stuyvesant on my mother's side, should live to see the day that my own husband...
The court will rise.
No.
And Margaret.
Yes, dear.
They're about to begin. Why don't you take Elizabeth to a seat?
All right, James. Come along, dear. We'll find a comfortable bed.
If only he wouldn't argue with people. If only he would listen to me.
The Crown calls Hector Smith.
Jim, maybe if I plead guilty, they'll give me a lighter fine.
You can't plead guilty, Hector. The tax is unjust, and we must prove it so. May it please your lordship.
Are you Hector Smith?
I am James Anderson, your lordship, a solicitor engaged by Hector Smith for his defense.
Well, well, step forward. Don't stand there.
Yes, my lord.
Jim, why don't you ask him...
Please, Hector, not yet.
The bailiff will read the charge against the prisoner.
May it please your worship...
Silence.
Hector, please be quiet.
The bailiff will proceed.
Hector Smith, territorial colonist, is hereby charged by the Crown with failure to pay his just taxes under Section 7 of the Act governing the sale of sugar and molasses.
How do you plead?
Your worship...
May it please your lordship, this is not a proper charge, and a plea cannot therefore be entered.
Not proper? Ridiculous. I drew the charge myself.
Your lordship,
I insist that the prisoner plead. Is he guilty or not guilty?
Is he guilty or not guilty of what, my lord? Of not paying his taxes? Yes, of this he is guilty, but these taxes are levied without reason. They are an affront to the principles of justice and democracy.
Mr. Anderson, I like not your tone.
Nor I a court where the magistrate draws the charges.
Jim, they'll wind up by hanging me.
Hector, will you please stop worrying?
May I remind the solicitor that he does his client a disservice by such outbursts?
I ask your lordship's pardon. It shall not happen again.
Very well. I shall ask once more. How does the prisoner plead?
He pleads not guilty, your lordship, and a host of citizens stand firm at his side. Nowhere in the history of government...
The prisoner will rise.
If it please your lordship...
The prisoner will rise. Hector Smith.
Yes, your worship?
I find you guilty as charged.
But your lordship...
You will serve 18 months at hard labor and your property is confiscated to the Crown.
No!
Remove the prisoner.
This is infamous, your lordship. Parliament has agreed to consider our problem.
Mr. Anderson, we have no time for such trifles.
Trifles? Since when is a man's freedom a trifle?
Our courts are cluttered with this colonial rabble. Be satisfied that I did not order him hanged.
Your lordship...
Jim, don't risk your own neck.
I have a right to speak.
I order you to be silent.
And I demand that I be heard.
Bailey!
We have all been silent too long. We've asked only a voice in our own government, and to no avail. Now we shall speak with a voice of liberty and justice. We shall raise a cry of freedom that will echo through the hearts of all mankind.
This is treason.
This is truth! The God who gave us life gave us liberty as well. We are free men endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The militia! Jim, it's come. It's here.
Bailiff!
At last it's here. The final word has been said. The final stone has been turned.
Bailiff!
He's gone, my lord. And gone is tyranny. Gone is oppression. Gone is the iron heel that ground justice into the dust. We are aflame, my lord. The torch of freedom is lit at last.
And just as soon will be snuffed out. They'll shoot you down as they did in Boston.
Let them shoot, my lord. We are patriots, and our blood will nourish the streets and meadows and wooded hills. Our bones will bleach in the summer sun and chill in the winter snow. But if one man survives,
he will be free. From his sinews will come a new race of men. From his heart will come a new life. Through him we shall build a new nation in which our children will live without fear, in which justice and freedom will prevail. Through him will be born a new world. America!
July?
Well, not exactly, Kitten. That sort of thing went on for years, all over the colonies.
Well, what did happen on the 4th of July?
Oh, are you a dope? They signed the Declaration of Independence.
But I wish you wouldn't speak to Kathy that way.
But how can she be so dumb?
All right, genius. Who signed it?
What?
Who signed the Declaration of Independence?
Oh, gosh. Practically everybody.
But the Declaration of Independence was signed by 56 men.
Well, that's a lot, isn't it?
Daddy!
Yes, Kathleen?
There's only one thing I don't understand. What's so wonderful about the Declaration of Independence?
He'll tell you some other time, dear.
Margaret, if you don't mind, I'd just as soon tell her now.
While he's in the groove.
While I have all three of my knot-headed children in a listening mood.
What did I do?
Not a thing. And let's keep it that way.
Jim, if you're going to tell
them... All right, honey. The Declaration of Independence was written not to point out new principles or new arguments or even to say things which had never been said before, but to put before the people of the world an announcement of the fact that the American people considered themselves from that day forward an independent nation. Do you understand that?
Oh, sure.
Dear, she didn't understand one word you said.
Of course she did.
Maybe she did, but I sure didn't.
Well, I couldn't have made it clearer. You understood me, didn't you, Bud?
Yes, sir. Well, I promised Joe I'd help him do something.
What did I say?
About what?
The Declaration of Independence.
You mean the whole thing?
Or any small portion thereof.
This is going to be good.
Well, you said that the Declaration of Independence was important because it told everybody that on the 4th of July, 56 fellas got together and... Well, anyway, it's the birthday of the United States. That's the important part.
Oh, that's what it is!
Well, you could put it that way. And you know, come to think of it, isn't it strange that no one ever gives the country a birthday present?
Jim, really?
I mean it, honey. Everybody else gets them.
Father, if you'll buy the wool, I'll knit the country a pair of argyles.
Take her up on it, Dad.
How will she know what size?
That was a joke, dear.
Another one?
I'm being very serious.
Father, you're not.
I certainly am. We have the good fortune to live in the greatest country in the entire world. A country that has given us blessings far richer than we know. Our country has given us a heritage of freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom from want, freedom from fear, freedom to worship in any church we may choose. It gathered us all sorts of Americans from the far-flung corners of the earth and made for us a home. Give me your tired, your poor, it said, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Our country has a birthday every year, celebrated on the 4th of July, and all of us, no matter how rich or how poor, can afford the only gift it wants, a pledge of undying loyalty and devotion, a vow that in the year ahead we'll remember and observe the simple principles of democracy, a promise that, to the best of our ability, we'll live as Americans.
What is it that gives you so much pleasure in a really good cup of coffee? Why, it's flavor. Yes, ma'am, and naturally, for top value, you want the most in flavor for your money. So take home the one coffee famous above all others for flavor, our Maxwell House coffee. Start serving it to your husband, the world's greatest coffee expert. When he smiles with delight and says, "Best coffee ever," you'll know why Maxwell House is world famous for flavor. Then just count all the cups of truly satisfying coffee you get from that familiar blue Maxwell House tin with the big white cup and drop. That's what you call value, lady. At your own table, then, find out how much more flavor you get for your money with Maxwell House coffee. Always good to the last drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Robert Young. Tonight, Father Knows Best brings to a close its second season of broadcasts, and all of us will leave on our annual vacation. Before we go, however, the members of my radio family have asked permission to say their individual goodbyes. Being an indulgent husband and father, quite naturally, I had to agree. So here they are. June Whitley?
I hope you have a very nice summer, and be sure to come back with us in the fall, won't you? Goodbye.
Rhoda Williams?
Goodbye, goodbye. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say goodbye till it be morrow and have a real keen summer, gang.
Norma Jean Nelson?
We're going up to Round Lake again, and they've got boats and docks to jump off, and
Kathy,
you can go swimming and fishing. And this
Kathy,
year I'm going to collect things like snakes and bullfrogs. And if any of you come up to the lake, my mother's a wonderful cook, and she'll be only too
happy.
Did I say something wrong?
You're supposed to say goodbye.
That's what I was doing.
Well, say it.
Gee whiz. Goodbye, everybody.
And finally, a word from Ted Donaldson.
So long.
That was the word. Well, that just about does it, neighbors. I'm heading north to see a man about some fish, and I'll be driving carefully all the way. Oh, just one more thing before I go. If you take any trips this summer, leave early enough so you won't have to drive in a hurry, Then we'll all be around when it's time to get together again in the fall. That's the ticket. See you later.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Folks, Gainesy, the famous talking dog, always says, Gaines meal. What about Gaines meal, Gainesy? Nourishes every inch of a dog. It sure does. Kennel and laboratory tests prove Gaines meal supplies balanced nourishment your dog needs for good health. Yet Gaines costs less to feed than any other type of dog food. So, folks, get Gaines meal. America's largest selling dog food.
Remember, Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Barkey and the Maxwell House Orchestra, will return to the air over these same NBC stations on Thursday, September 6th. Our broadcast time will be one half hour earlier, and your local newspapers will remind you of date, time, and station. So until September 6th, this is Bill Foreman saying good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best is transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Dragnet, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
Thank you so much for joining us this week to celebrate Independence Day. Next week, we will return to our convoy of comedy with a two-week tribute to Red Skelton. I hope you will join us here at the Old Time Radio Hour for a little Clem Cadiddlehopper and Willie Lump Lump. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for now.